Blog Talk Radio.
Edition of Morelia Python Radio, brought to you in part by Morelia Python Forums.
No.
I'll get it right this time. MoreliaPython.com. Go over there and check it out. Definitely one of the best forums when it comes to carpet pythons on the World Wide Web. Tonight, we have a special show for everybody. We are joined by none other than Mr. Paul Harris from UK Pythons. For those of you who do not know who Paul Harris is, he has one of the most cutting-edge collections of carpets in the world. I remember back in 07 stumbling across his website and just being blown away by what these carpet pythons look like. I mean, when I got into pythons, I remember thinking carpet pythons is kind of an afterthought, and you know, they kind of look drab and dull. And then I saw his website and was like, what the hell is going on here? So now we're having him on tonight. So I'm pretty excited to finally be able to get to talk to Paul and find out what exciting stuff is coming up in the future. If you have any questions for everybody, I know this is a pretty popular show. I got a lot of feedback about Paul coming on. The call-in number is 347-215-7359, or you can email me at info@moreliapythonradio.com. But enough of my babbling. Let's see what Owen has to say, and then we'll get on with Paul. What's up, Owen?
What's up with me is I'm really excited about the show. Like you... I mean, once you stumbled on UK Pythons, if you're any kind of carpet breeder, you eventually get over to Paul's site and you find the animals that is, you're looking at them and you know that they're what you want a couple years down the road. And I mean, I know the first zebras that came out, I was all about them on Paul's site, and the granites and all those other things, and the things that we own now that, you know, it's like, oh my God. Our dream is realized, and then we go back on Paul's site. We're like, God damn it, no, there's more, and I want that one, and this one, and that one. And so it is definitely very cool to have him on, because it is definitely the cutting edge of carpet python is Paul Harris. So I'm very excited for this. And what's actually happening here is we got more babies. We got that M-Pen clutch that with the mysterious daddies decided to hatch on me over the weekend, and looks like we got all tigers, bunch of tigers, and then one little baby caramel that I have no idea where she came from. So
wow.
I guess it's a dual sire clutch, which I heard can happen. So
that sounds like a question for Nick.
Yes. Let's get Nick, because then he'll give me an explanation that will, you know, be way more than I bargained for, but I will get the answer. So,
Yeah.
I will. I guess I will post that to Nick, and I'll see what he says. But we shall see.
Very cool. Very cool. It's pretty cool to be wrapping up your season in September, and then a month from now, I'll be starting it up again. You know.
That's cool. It's freaking wonderful.
Pretty exciting stuff.
Normally, I'm done by now, and I'm like, kicking back. All the babies that have hatched this year are feeding, and oh no, now I got to start up a whole new batch. But you know what? It is going to be cool. A little bit down the road when these things are getting a little bit plumper and bigger, you know, before we even have next year's babies, these things are going to be pretty nice size. So I am happy to be wrapping it up in September, I guess. Seems odd to me.
Yeah, I know. So I don't really want to hit on anything too much before the show. I just want to bring Paul straight on because I think he said it's midnight over at his spot. So without further ado, let's get this show rolling. Hey, Paul, welcome to the show. Glad to have you on.
Hi, guys. Glad to be here.
Awesome. So, like I said, we are two huge fans of your collection, Paul, and definitely love seeing what you guys are cooking over there at UK Pythons. Why don't you just take us all the way back to what got you into reptiles personally?
Oh, that's going back a long way. I was always interested in wildlife and birds in general, but when I got married, my wife had a tarantula, so we started going to pet shops to look for more tarantulas, and then I saw a Burmese python, a baby, and I just had to have it, and that was in 1985.
Jeez. Yeah. All right. So your first nick was a Burmese python?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what led from the Burmese python to the carpet pythons?
Well, I saw my first carpet python a few months after that at a dealer's house, and it was I'd never seen a carpet python before, and I was absolutely blown away by it. It was just a coastal. But you know, once I saw it, that was it. So I decided that I was going to get rid of the other snakes that I'd bought. And I had a few boas at the time, a couple of Burmese. So I got rid of all those and started buying carpet pythons, basically. And 1 year after that, in 1986, I imported my first carpets from the USA from a breeder called Dick Gergen.
Okay.
What were they? Coastals?
Yeah.
They were coastals, yeah.
Interesting.
Cool.
So, now, out of all the carpets that you got, did they lead to the morphs, or did you kind of just pick and choose some odd-looking ones you saw at a show, and that's what led to a morph?
No, back in the day then, getting carpet pythons was particularly difficult. I just gradually built it up over the years, and imported some jungle carpets as well from the USA in the early 90s.
Okay.
A breeder called Eric Skov. It basically went from there. The first morph I got was a Jaguar. That was in 2001. So prior to that, the sort of 10, 15 years before that, it was purely, subspecies of carpet python.
Okay. Just the wild types. And then from the Jaguar, that kind of took you down all the other paths of the other morphs that crop up.
That's right. Yeah, the Jaguar and, of course, the Zebra. And that's when the combo started rolling in. But prior to the Jaguar, I'm not aware of any morph as such. Before that, it was, just trying to get the subspecies together. And of course, then the Bredley when they became available.
Late
90s.
Okay, that sounds pretty good. I mean, you got the you focused a lot on the localities. I know Nick was talking to us about your Rockhampton coastals and things like that, about focusing on those kind of localities back then. So what made you kind of just start and turn it into a business as opposed to just kind of like a hobby? Well, what kind of started with Bay Pythons?
Yeah, well, obviously, you know what it's like with reptile hobbies. soon it gets out of hand.
Yeah, it does.
It just got to the stage in sort of mid 90s where I had such a large collection, it was taking up a lot of time. And then in about 97, I just quit my job to go full time. So I'd already been keeping and breeding reptiles for about 12 years by then. So, yeah, just turned it into a business. It just became, you know, it's a straight choice. Can't do both. And obviously I'd
much rather
work
for
myself and look after snakes and work a full-time job.
Awesome.
Was there any hesitation? Were you nervous about doing that, you know?
Not really, because obviously in the years before that, I'd been quite successful at breeding quite a few different Merida, including chondros. So, you know, I knew that it was possible to make a living out of it.
Cool. All right, so now we're going to hit on some of your projects that you have been doing. And tell us some of your most exciting ones from 2012.
Well, I don't know, really. I think the Super Caramel Super Zebra's quite cool.
Awesome.
I've got some tiger zebras or zebra tigers, whatever you might want to call those.
Oh, really?
They're quite cool. They're going to be, I think, you know, with a bit more selective breeding, I think they'll really improve.
Now, with the tiger zebras, do you notice striping on them? Or?
Yeah, it's a bit like a zebra, but with really fine markings on. They're much finer. Thinner.
Okay.
I've got three in the clutch. They stood out like a sore thumb, really, compared to the normal zebra in the clutch.
I will have to send you a picture of the one that I hatched out, because I thought that it kind of would look like what I thought it would look like the zebra jag markings would go thinner.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what's going on, and it looks different than the rest of them, so, I'm curious.
Yeah, it could be.
Maybe.
Cool.
Zebra granite jag. Nice to have one of those.
See, now we're getting three of them in there. Jesus. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Now, what about the, as far as the Super Caramel Super Zebra, did that surprise you? What do you think that's going to turn out when it gets older? Like,
it's
what's the color
to say
on it?
Because it's very difficult to say. I've got adult male breeder Caramel Super Zebra. That is from 2010. Very obvious compared to a normal Super Zebra. It's just way brighter. It seems that the center of the scales are even brighter than the edges, so it's got like this sort of almost like a net look to it.
Cool.
So I'm hoping that the Super Caramel Super Zebra will be even brighter still as it gets older. Obviously, there'll be very little sort of dark pigment at all, except for basically on the head.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, with the progression with the Super Caramel Super Zebra and the Caramel Super Zebras, do they follow that same progression as the caramel? Like, you know how that caramel goes through that awkward stage where they kind of look
ugly?
around about 18 months old, the caramels tend to look at their worst, I'd say. Obviously, they're extremely bright when they're born, and then, they're very colorful as adults, but sort of, as a juvenile, they do go through this dark stage. But it's, for a super zebra, it's sort of a bit different because there's sort of no discernible pattern really, except a kind of a sort of a lateral stripe. It just seems that the top half of the body is slightly darker than the lower half, and of course a slightly darker top of the head. So the adult caramel super zebra didn't really go for an ugly stage as such.
Very good.
That's good. No ugly stage.
Now, we're talking about super zebras, and I think one of the things that I really like is the albino zebra that you hatched out. That's a pretty wild snake. Now, my question is, what are your thoughts on what the albino super zebra is going to look like? Do you think it's going to be an all-white snake or an all-orange snake? Or
I think it's going to be an all-yellow to orange snake, depending on really what other blood is around in there.
Right.
Right.
I did unfortunately get two that died in the egg this year.
Oh, no.
They were... I'd say sort of a bright yellow, completely patternless, obviously red eyes with a slightly darker head.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just unfortunate.
Wow.
Yeah, but so I know it's going to look good.
yeah, I know that too, yeah.
Awesome.
No doubt. All right, awesome. Yeah, that's definitely a cool project, no doubt. Now, there was some thoughts going around about this ocelot gene, and I know that that's something that you've been working with. Can you tell us what your thoughts are on that gene?
Well, I've spoken to Nick about this at length. Basically, it just popped out when I was breeding a 50% jungle jag to a jungle female for the first time I'd used that female, and the original ocelot popped out then. Speaking to Nick about it, it's pretty obvious through other breedings that the non-jag parent does bring a lot to the party as far as jags are concerned, and obviously this female must have something in it that's making that pattern go crazy. Following year, I did the same breeding and got some more, maybe not quite so extreme as the first one, but obviously showing all the signs. And then this year, I bred the original ocelot back to its mother, and got another extreme one out. I posted that on Facebook about a month or so ago. So I don't know. I'm talking to Nick. I think there's something that the original non-jag parent has got in it. I don't normally breed jag to jag together, but I think, you know, next year I'm going to breed the ocelot to one of his sisters, which is also, you know, a jag displaying that same characteristics.
Right.
Just to see what bring out. But sort of taken a bit of a back seat, that project, really. But, I can start again next year and see what comes of it.
Cool. Yeah, I posted, I shared that picture over on the Morelia Python Radio Facebook page to what Paul's talking about, so if you want to check it out. So it's kind of like you have to have that, I guess it's a jungle, right, that you're breeding it to. You have to have that jungle, whatever's going on, hidden in that jungle somehow. When you're breeding it with the jag, it unlocks that crazy pattern. Now, what exactly is the discernible markings of the ocelot? Hello?
Uh-oh.
We lost him. there he is.
Okay.
Hey, Paul.
Yeah, I don't know what happened there.
That happens from time to time. It happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Usually, though,
you had enough of me already.
Show when, You know you're a good guest good on enough. Our show when you get kicked off. I was saying that what is the discernible markings of the ocelot jag? Like when you see the jag, what are we looking for? Is it that bullseye within the saddle? Is that?
It's just that whole thing. It's like the sort of neck striping, the really bold head pattern, and you know the sort of, I don't know how to describe it, but the sort of the wavy. The wavy sort of ocelli, if you like, along the body.
Right.
I mean, it wasn't even me that named it the ocelot. I think I'll put that up there on Marilia Python forum. Sorry, MereliaPythons.com. When it hatched in 2007, and said to people, "What do you think?" And somebody came up with the name ocelot, and it. I thought, well, yeah, it looks quite like that.
Cool.
So I don't know. So I've not really pursued that project too much, and I've only got a handful of them, but they all show the same sort of markings, you know.
Right. Yeah, I can't really put my finger on it too much, but I think when you see it, you know what you're looking at. Hmm. Would you say that some are? Is it a variable? Some
yeah,
more
definitely.
Extreme than others? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'd say it's definitely variable. It's like everything, really, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Some zebras are more extreme than others.
I think that's what
some
I love most about carpet.
Yeah.
That's my favorite thing about carpet pythons, how variable they are. What about the, you were hitting on the super zebra granite. Did that surprise
yeah.
you, how that looked?
No, really, it just looked exactly as you would imagine.
Okay.
The only thing that surprises is how much yellow has come through on the face.
Okay.
If you look closer, you can see faint speckling everywhere. There's quite a bit of dark pigment. The back is very dark. There's a lot of speckling along the flanks, and you know the yellow has really come out on the face of it. It's changed a lot from I don't know if you saw the photo of it when it was hatching.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It's really changed a lot since then. But
cool. Yeah. That's definitely a cool project as well. Now, what about the the striped inland, is that just something that just hatched out? Because typically inlands are banded.
Mm. Yeah, that's right. Been breeding inlands for a few years. And basically there's been nothing to choose from any of the babies. They've all looked very, very similar. This particular time, hatched out three babies that were striped. Really, I can't offer any more info than that. They're not large enough or old enough to breed yet. So obviously I'll be trying to breed them together and obviously breed one to completely unrelated inland as well to try and find out what the sort of genetics are behind it.
Okay. Cool. I guess. Well, you have the striped genetics that work in the brattle python mm-hmm. that you know is recessive, and then you have the
yep.
tiger genetics and the jungle stripes that work, you know, more as a polymorphic trait. So I'd be curious
yeah.
to see which one that follows.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, recessive would be nice, of course.
Yeah.
it would take longer time to take a while to find out exactly what's going on.
What's your thoughts on the inlands? Seems like everybody that's been on the show so far seems to be their favorite carpet that they work with.
Yeah,
they are. I mean, obviously it was one that took me a long time to finally track down. I think got my first ones in about 1999. They were a bit slow starting. friend of mine bred them in 2003. I didn't manage to breed them until 2005. But since then, they're pretty much breeding every year now.
Okay. Very cool.
So that's a sort of a natural azanthic, I guess. You know, the colours are completely different to any other carpet, as you know. You know, blue undersides and a lot of grey and silver.
Yeah, I can't wait to get a pair. They're, you know, everybody says once you see them, it's something that can't be can't be captured in a photo, you know. So
yeah, that's true.
Cool. I was talking. We were talking before the show, and you had this. I posted it up on Facebook. It was like a red-looking zebra that you posted up there. Do you remember that picture? And what is that?
No, I'm not sure what one you're talking about. There's was it a zebra or a zebra jag?
It looked like a zebra to me. It didn't. It was very. It was right after you had this really cool looking jag that was looked like some kind of super caramel tiger jag or something, and then it was like the next picture.
Yeah, I think I know now. That was a clutch with split paternity. I had a zebra bred to a tiger and a super caramel jag.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, can't quite work out what's going on some of those babies. So I'm just going to feed them up for a little bit more, see what goes on. But so that was a clutch. I got there was some tiger zebras in there. There was something that looked like, as you say, a super caramel tiger, but I'm not sure how that's possible. it's a, can't have two fathers in one baby. So, yeah, oh, and there was another one that looked like it could be a. It looks like it could be a super caramel zebra jag, but that's not possible because it can't be a super caramel. The pattern on it was so unique. I was wondering if there was some tiger in it too, but. You know, that can't be possible.
Right.
Well, so far, we don't think that's possible.
Yeah, we don't know. Which leads me to my next question. And I guess with you hatching out all these different morphs and such, I think my opinion is that carpet pythons are so variable. And often little subtleties in the carpets, I think, get overlooked. And do you have any type of dinker projects? I mean, is there anything that hatches out that you say, that looks different, and you hold it back and you try to figure out if it's a new gene or anything like that?
Apart from the obvious, like the ocelot or the striped diamond jungle, that's the only sort of things I really kept back. You know, obviously something going on. As you say, they're so variable that, you know, it's difficult to say.
Yeah, I think that, like, you know, I see that a lot of times with the ball pythons where they have, like, you know, just like, I don't know, to me it looks like a normal ball python, but somehow they seem to see something in it, and, you know, the ball python breeder says, oh, yeah, that's something special, and the next thing you know, they're hatching out this crazy snake when they...
Well, I'm sure it's going to happen in the future.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, the fact that we can't sort of import 200,000 carpets a year.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's sort of going against us a little bit on that.
True.
That is true.
Yeah. Speaking of that striped diamond jungle, what's the story behind that?
Well, that popped out. I bred a jungle zebra to a diamond jungle cross.
Huh.
And so apart from obviously diamond zebras and normal diamond jungle crosses, there was this one animal obviously stood out like a sore thumb. A nice stripe down its back and a really almost sort of faded pattern on the sides.
Right.
I did breed him back to, I couldn't breed him back to his mother, because unfortunately she died before he got to adulthood. But I did breed him to one of his sisters, and the babies just came out like normal Diamond Jungle crosses.
Okay.
So I guess that's not genetic, that, unfortunately.
Well, probably not, but do you think maybe further down the road, maybe some other breedings that might crop back up again?
Well, not so far.
Okay.
I say he's 5 years old now. I've not produced anything even resembling it yet, so
okay.
I think it's probably not going to happen.
That's unfortunate, but all right, well,
yeah.
Can't get them all. So, so
I did hatch a couple of Diamond Jungle before that were brown, really sort of brown instead of black. They sort of changed as they got older, but they didn't go as black as a normal Diamond Jungle. But I've not managed to breed anything out of that either.
Weird. That is kind of cool. Because, I mean, I've seen, I think Jason Balin over here hatched out this one baby jungle that was red and orange and crazy colors, and then it went completely left and turned the normal black and yellow like we always see. But for that, like, first couple weeks, people were like, oh, my God, what is this thing? And so, I guess weird colors happen sometimes.
Yeah.
Well, Paul, why don't you talk to us a little bit about how you keep your carpet pythons? You know, what kind of cages do you have in, and what are your temperatures and your feeding regimen?
Yeah. Okay, what, for adults or?
Adult carpets? Everybody.
Yeah. Okay, well, hatchlings, I keep them in a hatching rack system with small plastic tubs.
Mm-hmm.
Not really sure how big these tubs would be. Maybe sort of 2 liter or something like that.
Okay. Yeah.
That just kept in the baby rooms kept at quite a constant temperature. In fact, I've got the incubators in the baby room as well, so I keep it quite a stable temperature. Heat's on all the time for the babies, 24 hours.
Okay.
Hot spot of about 30, and the ambient in that room is about 27.
Okay.
I don't know what that is in
Fahrenheit.
In Fahrenheit, yeah.
That's
obviously centigrade.
Right.
So, and as they get bigger, I just obviously go up. It's racking all the way, really. Except for the largest of the carpets, I keep all my carpets in racking nowadays.
Okay.
Some of the tubs are quite big, though, even up to 4 foot tubs, all made by an English company called Provax.
He's been making
racking for me for about 10 years now.
Okay.
The largest carpets, I do keep them in big vision cages. I've had those for, I don't know, 15 years, 12 years or so. So the very large ones, like the, you know, Bredleys and the larger McDowley females. But otherwise, it's racking.
All right. Okay.
Yep.
What do you
The biggest rack would be 4 foot, and the next size down would be a 30-inch tub.
Okay. And they all have a belly heat or back heat, I assume, with the flex wire or something like that?
It's all heat mats under on for the adults. The babies have got heat mats behind.
Okay.
And the adults have all got heat mats underneath. So, you know, one section at the very back will be the hot spot where the heat mat is.
Okay. Okay.
And same story there. Hotspot of about 30, 32 in the summer. Ambient room temperature in the summer of about 24, 25.
Okay. Seems pretty much what, because I just did it, the 32 is about 90 degrees Fahrenheit, and the 27, 25 is about 80 degrees, which is pretty much what, you know, I got going on here, and what other breeders, it's pretty much seen what I hear is good for them. So.
Yeah.
Okay. And how about breeding? I know that you have a bunch of different animals and species and things like that. How do you break down breeding for those guys? Because I know right now, like, I have a pair of adult Bredleys, and I'm getting ready to breed, and I know they got to get culled, but then I also have my Aryan Jays, which I know they can't get culled. So how do you break it all down and get everybody where they're supposed to go?
Different rooms is, is one way. Another way is, obviously, you know, the bottom racks are going to be colder anyway. It's always the case. I don't use any kind of air conditioning or anything like that, or fans. So there's always a temperature layer, a temperature difference.
Okay.
But something that needs to be taken as cold as say, Bredley and Inlands, then they're generally either in a different room that's taken down colder. Like, for example, I've got quite a few blackheads as well.
Okay.
And I take those blackheads down cold as well.
Really?
Yeah.
You've had success with the blackheads going down cold for a season?
Just only at night time, you know. Everything's got heat in the daytime. But
right.
So the nighttime temperature for blackheads and the Bredleys and the Inlands, I do take that down colder than I would do for, say, Jungles, Coastals and IJs.
How cold do you let it drop?
Probably about 18.
18, okay. So that would be about 64, 65 degrees. Yeah. Okay.
Right. Do you follow that same for your Walmas?
Yeah, they're in the same room as the blackheads, yeah.
Okay.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So, shoot, I lost where I was going with that. Sorry, it's out of my head. It's gone now forever. okay, there it is again. When do you start fasting for their season? Do you kind of let them starve out? I mean, when do you start doing everything, and what do you do to kind of get them ready for the cool down?
I would stop feeding them probably 4 weeks before I change any temperatures to make sure that any last food's digested and out. Basically, I don't think it really matters when you do it. You know, whether you start your cycle in October, November, or December, it doesn't really seem to make a great deal of difference. It's just easier to go with the outside temperature. You don't want to fight against it. So, you know, in where I've been in Germany for the last 7 years until I'm back in the UK now, but where I was living in Stuttgart, it was quite cold there in the winter, a lot colder than the UK. So I would cycle for the coldest months in there. So my coldest time would be sort of January, February. So I wouldn't even put snakes together until January.
Okay.
Some people put them together.
The whole time, Do you let them winter together, or do you do introductions?
Well, I'll put them in January, and that's pretty much when it all starts. And they're normally finished sort of 8 weeks after that, and they're all separate again. It doesn't seem to really make any difference whether I put them together in December or January. The babies tend to hatch sort of first week in June onwards. I know some people are a bit before that. Some people are hatching their carpets in the beginning of May. But it works for me, and I just think it's better to go with, you know, if you've got the advantage of using the outside temperature, it's sort of a lot easier to get that temperature drop.
Mm-hmm. It's better to go with
rather than fight against it also.
Yeah.
Save on electricity that way as well.
It makes sense, and you know, if it works for you and it ain't broke, don't fix it. So, now you're pretty plugged into the carpet market. I mean, you're pretty much almost the beginner of any kind of morph that comes out. You get it before all of us. So, what are your thoughts on the future of the carpet python market? Have you seen kind of like a rise in the market due to all the morphs that have come out? Or have you kind of seen like it just kind of do business as usual?
No, it's definitely way more interest.
Wow.
In Europe, there was always a strong market for pure species and pure subspecies. It's always been strong like that. But, of course, once you've got them all, you've got them all, haven't you? And when the morphs started coming out, and the ball python market really helped that in Europe as well, because that sort of established morphs and mutations as something desirable well before we got interested in it, or any carpet morphs came along. So that did help. It sort of paved the way in Europe for it. And say there's a lot of interesting carpets now because of the different morphs and combos. Also, I think the USA is still the strongest market and the biggest market.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
It's not going anywhere. So, good.
it seems like it went from like the Jag, and now it's like now we're starting to see a few years later, all these different combos and whatnot coming out. I think that people's interest will only be spiked more and more. But even with the selective breeding of the pure species, I say all the time that, that I think, at least in the U.S., they focused on breeding the jungle, and look at the results they got.
Yeah, that's right.
When you start messing around with the Brettles and the Inlands and the IJs, and the Darwins, my goodness.
Yeah,
that's true. I mean, selective breeding is, it's been shown to really improve some subspecies, especially the jungles and the Eyrian gyres. Especially some of the Eyrian gyres that I've seen from the US are just mind-blowing.
Yeah, I'm thinking of right now, Luke Snelp, he hatched out some IJs this season from his GQ line of IJs, and they're just unbelievable. I mean, they're just crazy looking. So, speaking of that, what is your favorite carpet? Do you have a favorite? Is there one that you like more than the other?
Yeah, you have to pick.
That's a hard question, ain't it?
Yeah, the one that I don't have, probably.
It's like picking your favorite kid, right?
Yeah. The one you don't have, what don't you have?
That's a question.
I
don't know.
I know mine changes.
If you're talking about just a non-morph, non-mutation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Then I'd say probably a classic Darwin.
Classic Darwin.
Yeah.
Hmm.
The nicely banded classic Darwin is probably my favorite carpet.
Nice.
I think the coolest thing that I like about the Darwins is the eyes.
Yeah, they have that eye stripe, which is cool.
They just have those red eagle eyes.
I need some Darwins.
Very cool. Do you have a favorite morph?
A zebra, I think. It's
okay.
Yeah. It seems to work with in combination with all the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing really wrong with it. Not like the Jag, you know, with the dead super. There is, of course, a very tiny tail tip issue that you can get on a super zebra, which seems to be on about 70% of the babies. So it's not on everyone. I've hatched a few with perfect tails. So, yeah, it seems to be a morph without any sort of issues with it, and it does combine well. So, I'll say the zebra.
Zebra Jag, Caramel Zebra, they're two of my favorites that are in my collection, that's for sure.
Albino Zebra is something I keep gawking at, and then Jag Zebras, and it's so many combinations that I think I'm just going to have to break down and buy. So, we'll work on that later.
Something that's going off carpets for a second, but something that's near and dear to Owen. How's your rough-scale project coming along?
That's doing good.
I love the roughies.
They're really cool.
So bad.
They are really cool.
Have you produced any yet, or is this a few years off still?
Well, keep it to yourself, but I did hatch a few this year. Small touch.
Awesome.
Yeah, they're not for sale, so I didn't bother
telling anybody. Yeah,
right.
No, obviously, wow. I told a few fans and stuff, but there was no point, as I wasn't going to be selling any. So,
wow.
Are they easy to breed?
I think
pretty
so.
Straightforward.
Pretty straightforward. No difficulty at all. They were. I mean, they're only 2 years old now, so they were about 18 months when I put them together.
Wow.
They're not very large at all.
How about as far as the getting the baby started? Have you noticed any difficulty with that?
My snake facility is next door to a rodent facility, so I've got no problem whatsoever.
Man, that's pretty sweet deal.
Really convenient.
How do you hook that up, Paul?
Damn.
Yeah, that's what friends are for.
Yeah. So you're saying right that here. I should somehow convince Owen to stop breeding his
snake
and start breeding a rat?
Not happening. Not happening. Yeah. But Terry Phillips told us that they sometimes have problems with, because their teeth are so long, they'll actually scrape and cut the insides of their mouths, and especially these babies, and can cause themselves some mouth infections or something like that. Did you experience any of that, or has everybody kind of been smooth sailing?
No, but then I've not got the numbers to work with. You know, I've just got the adult pair, and they were well started when they arrived. Thanks, Nick. So he done the hard work there.
Awesome.
I say, I just hatched 8 babies, and I've had no problems at all.
Wow.
Curious on that, did they go through any kind of color change from babies to adults?
I don't know, because the adults I've got now, say they were already well started when I got them. But the young do seem, especially at night, they do seem sort of quite grey at times.
Okay.
But to me, they just look like miniature adults. They've got, you know, just the same sort of big bulgy head and blue eyes, and the colour's basically the same. But they do seem, when I can look at these babies at night, they do seem to be sort of quite greyish.
Awesome.
Okay. Cool. Now, I know you had mentioned blackheads earlier. You work with some pretty cool blackhead morphs as well, right?
Yeah.
What do you work with?
I've got hypermelanistic, which that just randomly popped out. just breeding some unrelated blackheads together. I say unrelated. Sometimes it's quite difficult because, you know, you might buy them from different people, but they could have been produced originally by the same guy. So what I thought were two unrelated blackheads just popped out some hypos, which has turned out to be recessive.
Okay, cool.
Also, same thing with azanthic. The year after I hatched out some hypos using some other blackheads, I popped out some azanthics. That really was a shock. That was a very exciting day.
I bet.
I did make a clutch of the double het hypo azanthic a number of years ago, but it was a poor clutch, and none of the babies survived. So I have to start again with that one. And I've got a pair of het albino blackheads that I got from Pete Norton in Holland. They are 2 years old now, so I'll be trying those this coming season.
Very nice. Let's see. I don't want to keep you up until the middle of the night, Paul. So I know it's super late there. Let's see. Why don't you go ahead, Owen, with the
I got this stuff. We got the miscellaneous questions that we like to ask everybody to further torture you. if you could have any carpet in your collection, what
yep.
would it be? Because now I know you have pretty much everything. So any carpet, there's no worry about money or anything like that. What would it be?
Yep. The hypermelanistic, the hypermelanistic Darwin, the black Darwin.
Oh, the black Darwin. Okay. Just nab her up real quick and see what you could do.
That is
that would
think. Now
that would be it's awesome. I didn't think about that one.
Now the story on that hasn't been bred in Australia, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Haven't really been following it. I know it's been around a long time. I'm not really sure what's gone on. There's been not much said about it, so hopefully they'll get something out of it and prove it out.
Hopefully.
Give us all hope, you know. I mean,
there's
plenty of Darwins around in Europe now and the US. Who knows? Someone might pop one out over here.
Now, that would be a cool Christmas present.
Oh, my God. See, now, Paul, you've had to have, like, you've had the experience of hatching out brand new to the world of carpet python morphs. You know, if I hatched out something that I knew was brand new, never done before, I'd probably just faint or something. You know, it's business as usual. So, I don't know. All right, now, next one is, if you could have any other Morelia other than a carpet python, what would it be?
I like the Bolins, of course, but I've actually got part of a project with a friend of mine. He's looking after them because he's a diamond python breeder.
Okay.
I think he's probably best off with those, but it'll be really cool if he manages to breed them, and I would definitely want some of the babies back, you know,
nice.
just to look at. But, I think that's a way off yet.
Okay.
I'm not sure, has it been done? Did Mark Spataro hatch any this year?
He has eggs, but I don't know if they hatched yet.
I think we're waiting on babies.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we're still a little bit of ways out for them to hatch. And then there's two clutches on the ground in the U.S., right, Eric?
Right. Is there?
No, I think there's one. I don't know if the other guy ever got eggs. I know he was pretty close, thought that there was eggs in there, but I haven't heard any follow-ups on that pairing. But I know Mark, he has eggs, so from what I'm told from talking to Jason Balin, he said that the hard part is getting the breed, obviously, and lay the eggs. Once the eggs are laid, then it's pretty much python.
They're coming. Yeah.
Eggs as usual. Yeah. So fingers crossed
right.
for Mark. That'd be cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think everyone's waiting for that.
I wonder how he managed to crack it.
Gosh, I hope he writes a book or something.
Yeah.
Tell everybody. Okay. Now, if you could have a non-Morelia species, what would it be?
Well, I think blackheads are probably my favorite snake anyway.
Really?
I've already got some of those, so...
Mm.
Yeah.
No, more of those?
Blackheads and womers.
Blackheads and womers.
I think they're
really
cool.
You haven't had any problems with girls trying to take a bite out of the boy, have you?
No, never. No.
Okay. I've heard some horror stories of, you know, you put the blackheads together, you come back, there's one. Good that you've not had any problems.
I've never experienced that problem at all. I've been keeping them since 98 as well, so quite a number of years.
Awesome.
I'm sure it has happened if you've heard about it, but I've never had any kind of cannibalism. But that does lead me on to one embarrassing story.
Oh, please, go ahead.
A long time ago, I think it's somewhere in the early to mid 90s. I had on breeding loan a ringed python male from London Zoo, and my female ate it.
So
that was a bit of an embarrassing phone call to make.
Oh, no. Hey, buddy, she ate him. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't
keep ring pythons any longer.
Yeah, now I'm worried about my ring pythons. Crap.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to be terrified to put them together.
Yeah.
Paul, when it comes to your blackheads, are you feeding them rats and mice, or what are you feeding them?
I feed them rats, but young rats, never fatty ex-breeders.
Okay.
I think they put on far too much fat if you do that. And I don't feed the males that often. Once they're up to adult size, I'll probably only feed the male adult blackhead about 6 times a year.
Jeez.
They stay really lean, and I think it makes them much better breeders as well, if they're not too fat. They're still long snakes, you know. They're still 8 foot plus, but they're just not as stocky. Obviously, you need a bit more weight on the females, but you don't need to be as fat as you might think.
Mm-hmm.
Do you follow that same formula with your llamas?
Yeah, the same. Exactly
same.
The same.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you find llamas are about the same? Are they easy to hatch out for you, or are they pretty straightforward?
Yeah. I think they're pretty straightforward. I mean...
Okay.
I think I learned early on not to get the eggs wet.
Yep, that seems to be the thing that everybody says, yeah.
Oh. Yeah, but I did mummify one this season.
Oh. An egg?
One egg.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously you can go a bit too dry the other way, but by and large, you know, you get a pretty good hatch rate on those.
Do you do any kind of, like, maternal incubation with any of your...
No, never tried it.
Really?
No. I'm not the only one.
Yeah, I'm too much of a control freak, I guess. I know Mummy knows best. But, I like to get those eggs away in the incubator so I can look at them and dream about what's inside and get the female back on food.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, I guess if you want to, that's definitely something for maternal incubation. You're definitely not breeding that female the following year, that's for sure. Well, you shouldn't. I guess maybe you could, but it might be a disaster clutch.
It's a stretch. It's going to be tough getting her back up to wait in time. You can do it, but I'd be surprised if you couldn't make it.
So with your egg box, especially with your womans, are you setting them up on like the no substrate method type of deal, or are you putting them in vermiculite, or how are you setting them up?
Yeah, still old school. Vermiculite and water mixed, and then
okay.
on top a dry layer of perlite. Do you get that over there? It's that
yeah.
white.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, just a normal vermiculite and water mix with dry perlite on top.
So you put them right into the substrate? Around top of it, I guess.
Just sit the eggs directly on top of that.
Okay.
So it's just a barrier. The perlite's just a barrier, so there's nothing damp touching the egg.
Right.
I know it's not the only way to incubate eggs, but it seems to work, so.
Why change?
I've been tempted.
Yeah, if it works for you.
Yeah. I've been tempted to get rid of the old vermiculite and everything because it's such a mess making it up. But, you know, it only takes a few hours to make all the boxes ready. So I normally do it all in one go so that everything, all our eggs are laid over a couple of month period. I've got four incubators.
Wow.
I only used three this year. So just put a lot of boxes in each one so that I'm not having to sort of put new, because I mix a vermiculite up with boiled water as well. Don't know
okay.
why, just always have done.
Okay.
So I don't like to put a fresh batch of boiled vermiculite in an incubator where there's already eggs in, so I tend to sort of do it all in one hit.
Okay.
Okay.
Interesting. Now, I have a question for you when it comes to how many pairings are you doing a year? Because, you know, like, we've been talking back and forth on the show is like, you know, we kind of feel like we don't want to oversaturate the market, but at the same time, if you want to see these carpet python morphs and try to push them ahead, then you got to breed them. So, where do you fall into that? Are you doing more than 20 pairings? Are you doing 50 pairings?
Yeah. Not 50, no.
Okay.
So last year, because I knew I was relocating to the UK from Germany, and I was doing that in September, I didn't want to be burdened with, you know, hundreds and hundreds of extra hatchings. So I did a sort of a light year last year, just tried for the sort of new combos, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
Right.
And obviously a few snakes to sell because, you know, that's how I make my living.
Sure.
pretty much the same this year because it's taken me so much time to get up and running and set up. Haven't really sold all the stuff from last year. And there was quite a few females that I arrested this year. And also a few pairs that I'd tried that didn't come off because, you know, one thing or another, the male's too young or whatever.
Right.
So anyway, I got about, I think it was about 450 eggs all told this year.
Wow.
Which is not anywhere near as many as I could have produced. But
okay.
There's some blackheads and wormers in there. I think I hatched about 40 Aspidites in that this year.
Wow. That's a good number. What size collection are you working with?
I don't really know.
Right.
Over
200?
I don't know. You know, I've got so many. Do you mean just breeders or?
Yeah. Like
your
breeders.
I've probably got, not that I try for this number, but I've probably got 60, 70 adult carpet females.
Okay.
Wow. But I don't ever try for that number.
That's just
market saturation and stuff.
That's just like the, yeah, I know all too well. It's like, you know, you got to have the whole set.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, you got 60, 70, 100 carpet pythons, adults, and, you know.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, my other question was, is I like, what do you do as far as, like, you know, I mean, when you're going to sit down to start your breeding season, do you sit down with a cold beer and a piece of paper and try to plan out the pairings, or is it kind of like you already have it planned way ahead? Or
no, that's two cold beers and a spreadsheet.
One, that's not enough.
Yeah. No, it's outcomes of spreadsheet, and then I'll shoot that over to Nick and say, right, let's make sure we've got everything covered.
Right.
And just, you know, sort of put males to females until on the sheet, and, you know, see what the possible outcomes are going to be. See, that way you can cut down on making it, you know, sort of unnecessary clutches if you know you're going to hatch, if you're going to do enough pairings to get your caramel zebras and this and caramel zebra jags, that kind of thing. Obviously, the pairings for the pure locale stuff. So, it's basically just all done on a spreadsheet.
Okay.
Awesome.
It takes quite some working out to make sure you've got everything covered. Yeah,
that's kind of where I've been going with my season. The upcoming season, it's like, oh, well, you know, then I think about something else, and then I change it, and then I'm like, oh, well, I don't know if I want to do that, and I change it, and it's a never-ending process, I guess.
Yeah. Cool. Never does, though. I mean, I've had to alter mine because I've been adding, like, the Centrillions weren't even on my list, and now they're here. So I guess I need to make room for breeding them. So it's one of those things. And also, once you get started, you know, it's going to change because some boys don't really like, or some girls don't like the boys you put in with them. So it's always
called Plan B.
Yeah, always have.
You're not
plan
working.
B.
Next one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually did set up a bunch of Plan Bs this year because I've had last year, apparently none of the girls like any of the boys I put in with them, so it was one of those, okay, who else can get the job done that would be worth my while, then, so.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah. Okay. I'll generally sort of do this, you know, in about November.
Mm-hmm.
I know. Because then, you know, I tend to, like, look at, first off, go and look at every female and decide if she's going to be part of the breeding or not. So that's where the first part of the list comes from. And then it's just going around working out which male to go with that particular female and what the plan B is if nothing happens.
Okay. When you're looking at that female, are you shooting for a weight, or are you looking at, you know, are you just looking at her overall health, or what?
I do weigh it just for the, I gave some data for Nick and Justin's book.
Yep.
So I was doing things like weighing and stuff like that for that kind of thing as well. It does help. So now we can generally, you can just look and see, yep, she's definitely in the right condition. And she's old enough, and you want to use her in the breeding. That's basically what I do.
You know, I remember listening back to episodes of Reptile Radio and always hearing, like, breeders say that, and I guess I'm going to throw out there for the people that haven't bred that are listening to the show, trust me that there's – once you see that, then you start to get an eye for it. But it's hard to – at least that's my experience, you know. I remember hearing everybody say, yeah, you just kind of look at it and you kind of know that she's ready to go. And, you know, you're kind of like, what the heck does that mean? You know, and then you do it and you're like, oh, now I get it. You know?
Yeah.
So, very cool. So what would be your most exciting pairing for 2013? Do you have anything that you're excited about? Or?
I'd really like for those albino blackheads to go.
Oh, wow.
That would be, I think that's my, that's my biggest wish.
Okay.
For this coming season.
That's going to be a wild
carpet thing. Wise.
Oh.
Carpet wise, I don't know.
I figured that out.
Hypo Bradley, striped inlands, something
okay.
like that.
Gotcha.
That's
awesome.
There's always going to be, you know, new combos.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Of course.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, until you see it, you have to shoot for it because it could be purple with pink spots. I think on species, I think it would be get those hypo Bradley going and the striped inlands.
Okay.
Striped hypo Bradley would be awesome.
Cool projects. Definitely cool projects.
Yeah.
Let's put it this way. There's definitely going to be some world firsts coming out of UK pythons probably next season.
All the damn
We'll leave it like that.
So. Yeah.
Which is good.
Yeah.
That's really
it's
cool.
Great.
So.
Yeah.
I don't know. Albino blackheads, I always found them kind of cool looking. And it's going to be cool to get those and start mixing them with the other morphs that you got.
Yep.
See what you can come up with.
Yeah, so I'm a long way off a snow blackhead.
So
I need a visual albino first.
Yeah, need that first, and then then we got a ways.
So yeah, his antics. I've been breeding those for 10 years now. So it would be nice to have an albino to go in the mix as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then you would have a shot at a sun glow blackhead, right? Caramel, hypo, albino.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wow.
And a hypo.
Exanic. So a ghost. Wow.
Jeez.
That's pretty wild.
That is going to be cool looking.
Wow. All right.
All right. Well, more crazy stuff coming out of UK pythons rather than just the. Carpet stuff now. It's going to be some crazy blackhead stuff in a few years. So.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, we all hope so. It's going to be, it'd be very cool to see those. Jeez. Get us all hooked on a blackhead next.
Now, as far as the blackheads, just on a side note, is do you find it difficult to get the... I hear horror stories about trying to get the babies feeding. Is that something that you've encountered?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd say 90% have to be assist fed.
Okay.
First.
Oh my god.
I guess more a higher percentage would feed voluntarily if you left it long enough. But I don't really like to do that because they're so large when they're born and they've got such a big belly full of yolk that I don't think they'd be interested in any food for a while. Once that yolk reserve is gone, and they just don't seem to show any interest in rodents at all, I generally just assist feed them all. I would do that when they're about 8 weeks, if they've shown no interest, to assist feed them all. And the second time, I would assist feed them and put a second fuzzy mouse, lay that in the box. And generally, once I've swallowed the one that I've put in the mouth, they'll go and hoover up the other one.
Very good.
And then that's it. They're on their way. And they never look back.
Yeah. And I have one blackhead, and it's an eating machine. But that's what I've heard. But once you get them going, it's no stopping. So,
yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure other people have got tricks and methods that they get them to eat voluntarily or try different food or whatever, but I just generally find it so easy to assist feed them because, you know, they are big snakes. Yeah.
Right, right.
It's so easy to pop the fuzzy in the mouth, and you know they might try and spit that out, but most of the time it just gets swallowed.
Right.
Awesome.
Yeah, why waste your time with dangling on tongues and holding out and worrying about them? Just get them going.
Yeah.
Get them started and run. Yeah. Awesome.
Cool. Is there anything else you wanted to hit on, Paul?
Well, I don't know. I mean, ask me a question. I can't think of anything to say.
Well, I'm currently out of questions other than that I noticed you work with the Anthuresia species as well, with the spotted and the Cape York spotted. How's that project going? Have you produced any out of them, and have you found them difficult to breed at all?
I used to keep Anthuresia a long time ago, children's pythons and spotted pythons. The children's pythons, I did import those from Dick Gergen way back in the, I think that was about 86 or whatever. I built up quite a big group of those and bred quite a lot of babies. Eventually, when I sort of focused, I sold off all the other Australian pythons except for carpets and blackheads.
Okay.
I had Fuscus, Olivaceous, stuff like that. So, yeah, I used to keep this stuff before, and I've recently got some Cape Yorks and these Granites. They came from the US as well, and I got a clutch of the Granites this year, but I only managed to hatch four babies out of six eggs. The female was really small. She only weighed 185 grams after she laid the clutch.
Wow.
So I did get four babies out, and they were really tiny, weighing around about 10 grams. I think it's obviously the same line, I think, that Justin's working with. Nick rounded them up for me and sent them over. That Granites have been around in Europe for at least 20 years, but they didn't really seem to take a big foothold, so they're quite hard to come by over here now.
Yeah, and they started growing patternless. So.
Yeah, I think that the patternless is just an extreme version of the Granite, as far as I can make out.
Yeah.
My adults are certainly patternless. The babies, you can see granity or speckling on them. It's not as much as I've seen. So I don't know whether it's just an extreme version or, I don't think it's a different mutation. Granite and patternless are the same thing.
Yeah, I've been thinking that too. So, interesting.
Yeah, but I'm trying to get a few more Anthuresia together. And back to the old days.
I think one of the cool projects that you hatched them out this year is the Savu pythons.
Yeah.
I didn't hatch those. They came from Mark Bell.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Savus and the silver Savus, which I'm led to believe is a recessive mutation.
Silver Savus look amazing, and are you getting more into the Liasis as well?
So I used to keep them. I hatched my first olive pythons in 1993.
Jeez.
So I, I've been keeping the Aces for a long time. But,
awesome.
Yeah, I just thought, you know, I'm sort of in a position to, I've got the space and the time.
So why not? Yeah.
You know, diversify a little bit more.
Awesome.
You know, can't just keep on having tons of the same thing, you know?
Yeah.
Something different.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So, yeah. So,
there's one more, which would be your Caramel Tiger project.
Caramel Tiger?
Yeah, the Caramel Tiger. I hatched out a clutch of Caramel Tigers this year, and I only got one real Caramel Tiger. I got a bunch of other just caramels. Now, the what have you seen so far with the progression of the colors on the Caramel Tigers? Are they kind of turning out like normal caramels, or are they getting a little bit brighter because of the tiger gene, or whatever? Have you seen anything real crazy pop out of them?
It's definitely still a Caramel Tiger, even though, you know, it's, I don't know what, 14 months old now.
Mm-hmm.
Is going to be big enough to breed.
Wow.
So I'm definitely going to put him back to one of those really nice tigers that I got from Messrs. Bailing and King.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I think it can improve. I think it can definitely be improved upon. Color wise.
Okay.
But I've got a Caramel Tiger Jag that I hatched the same year, which is a female. Wow. Which she won't be big enough to breed this year, but she is amazing. She's like just, you know,
wow.
The tiger has just completely cleaned up the jag pattern, obviously. And the caramel has just completely cleaned up the background color. It's
wow.
It's really, really bright.
That would be nice to see.
That's a cool, that's going to be a cool snake, a super caramel tiger. You know,
with
that solid stripe. Yeah, that's going to be a nice snake. I think the other project that you have going on is the albino tiger. I think that's going to be another cool snake.
Striped albino.
That
was really strange because I got a really high percentage of tigers out when I bred a Bailing tiger female, which is a really good example to an albino Darwin male. And I got a very high percentage of tigers out there. You know, already, you know, very nicely striped.
Awesome.
I think it can really be improved on that.
Have you seen with your Darwins that you've been hatching out, have you seen any striping with those?
Yeah, I've got some almost sort of reduced pattern Darwins hatched. Heads, not visual albinos.
Right.
That's sort of reduced pattern, I'd say, is as near as you could get it. There's quite a lot of Darwins do get sort of a striping down the backbone. It's not quite so easy to see in the actual albino, the real pattern that's underlying. But I do prefer the actual classic Darwin, the nicely banded.
Oh, okay. I like the, I think Justin was on the show last week, and he has that female that he got from you. And I think that's like a really nice example of a Darwin. But it has like this, I think, I don't know how to explain it, peppery pattern on it.
I know what you mean. I don't really know how common that is.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was just going to ask you, is that something that you see hatching out?
Not so often. Not so often, but, you know, I don't hatch that many. I'm not really sure how common that look is, really.
Oh.
I have seen that same peppery pattern in my Baylin Red Tigers.
Yeah.
I have a Red Tiger that has that same type of look, but it's striped. I'm going to give it a shot to see if that's anything genetic. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just interesting that it shows up in another subspecies.
Yeah, I'm sure, as you said earlier, there's going to be quite a few things that pop out that you're going to want to keep back and try and prove out. Yeah,
right.
The more carpets that are being bred, obviously more things are going to pop out, aren't they? That's the excitement of it.
Yeah, that's the fun.
Yeah. What we need is a pliable carpet.
Yes. I second that.
That'll be the I think that'll be the one that would set us apart.
Yeah.
Push us over that edge, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, we definitely need one or two more base morphs to be getting on with to give us plenty of things to work with in the future.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, so roll on the melanistic Darwin. And the pliable carpet.
Yeah, nice. And they have that, was in the book, the silver peppered
silver
inland.
Pepper.
Yeah.
The inland.
The inland, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's amazing, that thing.
Yeah,
man, I would like.
And then there's that, the tribal carpet, whatever that is.
Yeah.
Super stripe.
Yeah, super crazy striped.
Yeah, that really is striped.
Yeah,
I've no idea what that is, though.
Yeah.
It's cool.
No idea. I've no idea what's in there. What, you know, what's in the mix.
Yeah.
You never know.
Well, hopefully someday soon we will. It will be revealed, but that's definitely a cool snake. Definitely. Cool thing, but I think what is it, the peppered inland, and then you got the labyrinth IJ that still hasn't been proved out. I know we had Chuck and Nick both talking about that, and
that's
kind of been floating around forever. Nobody seems to have luck with it.
Yeah, I've still got two pairs of those over here.
Okay.
I can't get them to do anything at the moment. They don't really seem to be growing that well.
Okay.
Very fussy eaters. They'll nail anything that moves, but they'll quite often just leave it. It's very difficult to get them consistently feeding.
Okay.
Suffered a bit with respiratory problems with those as well in the winter.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'm not sure I'll ever get those into breeding condition, but I'll carry on trying.
That's good.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, so that's some cool projects in the future, but definitely I think the carpet python morph, carpet python market in general is... there's some cool stuff in the upcoming future for sure. No doubt about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah,
I'm
definitely.
Excited.
Yeah, and there's going to be new combos every year.
Awesome.
More stuff to come out.
Never
exciting stuff. Nick and Justin will have to revise their book.
Yeah.
You keep
those guys
chapters.
In the job, right?
Yeah. Jeez.
It will be the more complete carpet python.
Exactly.
That's right. Yeah.
Very cool. So, Paul, if somebody wanted to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
Well, my email address is, you've guessed it, paul@ukpythons.com.
Pretty easy to remember.
Yeah.
Seems very easy to remember.
Yeah, and obviously the website is ukpythons.com.
Okay.
I do ship to the US at least once a year.
Yeah.
But I generally do it as one big shipment over to my buddy Nick. And
yep.
then he will then distribute everybody's snakes overnight to them. Doing it this way saves everyone the hassle of an international shipment and also saves a bunch of money on permits and the international shipping as it is. So
sure.
although it's still it's quite an expensive thing to do to ship internationally, but if we can get, you know, 15 or so people on the same shipment, then it brings the cost down for everybody.
Yeah.
Probably going to be shipping hopefully in 6 weeks' time. If anybody's listening and they want a carpet python, then, I'm going to be shipping around 6 weeks' time, I guess.
Okay.
So how much of that stuff is actually going to Eric?
that's between Eric and his bank manager.
Exactly.
There's like a box. It's like, this is all Eric stuff. Everybody else's is coming tomorrow. So, jeez.
Well, I kind of like the program that I send it to Nick, and then he raises it up, and then he sends it to me.
Yeah.
I don't know how Nick likes that, but worked out for me and Paul. So.
I think Nick's getting the short end of the straw there.
Yeah.
At least he's forced into working with Intergrades then and crossing.
Yeah, exactly. We keep him on his toes, Paul, don't worry.
That's right.
So maybe, you know, it comes to his house and he's probably kicking himself and saying, damn, I could probably make this. And here it is sitting in my tub and I have to raise it. Damn it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, a man's got to have his principles.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's definitely if anybody listening is looking for some cool carpet pythons or some morphs or definitely go over to UK Pythons and check out what Paul has. And definitely when it comes to cutting edge, you can't get any more cutting edge than what he has. And get in contact with Paul and or get in contact with Nick or however it works, but I've been a member of that shipment for the last couple of years, and I can tell you that it's a very cool thing. And
Eric's Christmas is what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'd like to take this opportunity to say a big thank you to Nick for, he does put a lot of effort into this for no financial gain to himself. It's just to help.
Yeah.
Me out and everyone, obviously, if I've got something that he wants, which is quite often, then, yeah. But, yeah, he does put a lot of work and effort into organizing all this. So, thanks, Nick.
Yeah. I will thank Nick as well because, his hard work I benefit from. So, I will thank him as well.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So, I guess we're winding down on time. So I just want to thank you, Paul, for coming on the show. And
it's been good.
It's super exciting for me. And, you're welcome back anytime when you hatch out your world's first for the next season. Be sure to come on and we'll chat it up.
Yeah.
Yep, I will.
Mounted nice and proper.
Okay. So very good. So thanks for coming on the show, Paul.
We'll let you go to bed now.
Yeah, I'm going to go to bed. I have to be up in about 6 hours.
Oh, God.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks,
Paul.
Guys. Cheers.
Have a good night.
And you. Bye.
Hold on one sec.
Oh, God. Now we have to wait.
Actually, during the show, a couple of times I kept getting booted off. It was pretty bad when the host gets booted off.
It's like, no.
I'm like, come on, really? on this show of all shows, really.
Well, thank God we didn't get like what happened
with Damien.
Blog Talk went down.
Yeah.
Yeah, with Damien. I mean, thank God that didn't happen. Sorry, Damien, no offense to you, but it's just like, oh, thank God we made it through. So.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was a cool show. It's nice to finally get to talk to Paul. I've only ever corresponded with him through email, and most of my correspondence has gone through Nick to Paul. So,
got to talk to the guy that produced most, if not all, of my collection.
Yeah,
that's
pretty exciting. So,
yeah.
Let's see. What do we have to hit on before we jump off here? There's some cool things.
Oh no!
That will be coming up in the near future.
Okay.
I can't exactly talk about. There's two projects in particular that I'm working on. One I will tell in due time, and the other one I'm just waiting to hear back from the other participant. It's going to be cool. It's just my way to try to. It's going to be a contest, and the other participant is. Seems interested in wanting to take part in it, but I'm either going to be giving away a zebra or a jet.
Oh my god!
I'm tying it into Carpet Fest and Morelia Python Radio, so stay tuned for that. You're gonna have a shot at either winning a zebra carpet. Or a jag, so it should be cool.
I could also throw my hat in and say that I could match with a caramel.
Okay, well, that's pretty cool as well.
Fuck with that. I mean, I've been also thinking about what I'm going to be bringing to Carpet Fest for the auction, and it's looking like I might have some tigers and stuff that I'll be bringing now, so we shall see.
Cool. And then on our... I haven't officially put it up yet anywhere yet, but on our 100th episode.
Yay!
Not our 100th episode. I keep saying 100th episode. On our year.
I was waiting for it. I'm like, 100th episode? My God, we've done so much.
Our year of Morelia Python Radio.
Yes, that will be in October.
We're going to have a little bit of fun. And I sent you the outline to the. Morelia Python Radio Awards type of thing, and I haven't secured the prizes, but the thought is that over on Morelia Pick of the Week on Facebook, if you guys and girls haven't seen that yet, you know, go over there, check it out. It's on the Morelia Python Radio Facebook page, and I was thinking that we have our categories. Of course, the light side, and of course, the dark side.
Dark side, uh-huh.
Yeah, and then we have scrubs, chondros, carpet morph, and most valuable carpet python, and that kind of thing. But there's 12 categories that we're going to do, and with those 12 categories, we're going to pick those 12 snakes and put it into a calendar. So it's going to be like the Morelia Python Radio calendar. And that's going to be another way to we're going to try to raise funds for U.S. ARC. I think it will be cool. It will be fun. You know, it's trying to promote the hobby. That's kind of what I'm all about. So, stay tuned for details on that, but we're going to get that going. What else? We have Tinley Park coming up, and of course that's going to be Carpet Row.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be headed out there, unfortunately, Owen's not going to be coming with me. It's just kind of a bummer.
Shut up.
Can't you just call out of work or something like that?
I have far too many. I can't. Like they pretty much gave me the speech of, oh, and you're out of vacation days. You call out again, you're dead. Unfortunately, for those of us who don't do this as a full-time gig,
yeah.
We have to keep our day jobs. So.
Yeah, I'm still in my day job. Hopefully one day I'll be able to do this full-time. But until that time, I'm going to be headed out there. I'm pretty excited about that. So I'm going to be doing the field reporting, so to speak, from from Tinley Park.
Luke is going to be devastated. We replaced him with you.
Yeah, we'll still chat it up with Luke. And,
of course.
It'll be exciting. And so there you go. Yeah, and definitely I'm going to try to push Carpet Fest while I'm out there. I mean, I guess if we were going to push Carpet Fest, that would be the place to do it. So
pretty much.
I'll be passing out some flyers and such and, trying to pass out flyers from Morelia Python Radio and, try to get people knowing what we got going on. So that should be a fun time. Let's see. What else do we got? As far as MoreliaPythons.com, that's the forum. Go over there, check it out. Definitely a cool forum as far as carpets and Morelia go. As far as Morelia Python Radio, we have MoreliaPythonRadio.com, of course. That will take you to our Facebook page. That also will click you into Morelia Pick of the Week, which keeps growing and growing, so I'm pretty happy with
awesome.
It. I love that. I really do. I love every morning coming and looking on my Facebook and seeing all the cool carpets from around the world. You know, it's worldwide. It's got people from Australia, the States, the UK.
We're bringing nations together, if you will.
That's what we're doing, Owen. That is true. I think that might deserve the honor.
For those of you who don't know what that horrible noise was, that was applause.
Yeah, I listened back to the episode, and this one turned out pretty good, and I'm just going to hit this because...
Don't stop it. Stop it.
I just
stop
like...
It.
You underestimate the power of the dark side.
I hate you. I hate you so much.
That's pretty cool.
Get through one damn show that you're playing that.
let's see what else I got. Of course, the Blog Talk page. You can go over there and you can listen to past episodes. It's kind of like an on-demand thing. You can follow us there, and every time we have a show, it'll send you out an email to let you know. Every once in a while, we throw in these curveballs. Like tonight, we do it at a different time. And
seven, to accommodate some of our guests who are, not on, in Pennsylvania. So
we pretty much hit around the world now. We've hit the UK. We've hit
if you are a carpet breeder in Japan or China, call us because you're on the list of nations we have not been at. So Africa too.
I guess we can count Mo as she's kind of from Hawaii, so that kind of counts.
Well, I'm going to give us half of Hawaii. Yay!
We've hit Canada.
Been in several different states. Australia. Been in London. Been to UK.
One of the crazy things that I heard, one of the things when we started this is how are you going to fill... you're going to run out of guests and, stuff like that. And how Carpet Python is going to be talk for, how many episodes. But, I'm very excited with the future. We have a lot of cool things coming up. So, the sky's the limit. So it's a lot of work, but definitely people tune in for the breeders and their insight and, they get to hear take a peek into their world and hear what they have going on. And I'm just glad that I'm a part of it. Cool thing. So I digress. You can check us out on iTunes. And if you have any questions or any show suggestions or anything like that, you can always send us an email at info@MoreliaPythonRadio.com. We have a couple things that I want to shout out for some of our past guests. They have the, looks like Howard Redding from Redding Reptile Breeders. He is hosting the Carpet Fest, and that's on May 18th, 2013. That's going to be in Waldorf, Maryland. I always like to throw out where he's going to be at, and he's going to be at the Maryland, I guess that's, what's the name of that, Alan? The
Habit of Grace?
Habit of Grace, yeah, that's it.
Right.
He's going to be there with Jason Balin and Mo from Mojo Reptiles.
He'll probably be up at White Plains, too, on Sunday, unless he tells me different.
So if you are down south and want to hit them in Maryland, they'll be there on Saturday. If you're up north, definitely go check them out at White Plains.
Oh, my God, you're going to do both? Jesus.
Yeah, they're doing both back to back.
Wow.
Definitely have some cool carpets going on, and I think all three of them are going to be out at Tinley Park as well. So.
Wow.
And I know Luke's going out to Tinley Park, so we'll give him
right,
a shout
okay,
out.
I got it. Everyone is going to Tinley Park, but
except
Owen. Okay.
Owen.
Yeah.
Sorry, Owen.
I want multiple pictures of this. Where this is where Owen would be standing, signed. Like, you know.
Can I take a picture of you and cut it out like Calvin and stick it in the spot?
Yes, I will fully support this. Me on popsicle sticks, and here's Owen. So,
yeah.
I fully support this. Keep it away, only if you keep it away from Howard.
So if I have a table there, I'm going to have me and a cutout picture of Duke. And it's like, you know, Owen's kind of quiet today. He's not signing any autographs or anything.
Yeah, it happens. And, somehow I imagine just Howard would get a hold of it, and then Facebook pictures would just be horrible and gruesome and so on. Yeah. I'm taking notes
awesome
to not do this. So.
Yeah. And then, like I said, you have Carpet Fest. You can go and check out everything over there at carpetfest.com. I have to update that for our 2013. But obviously that's brought to you by, like I said, Redding Reptile Breeders. It's also brought to you by Mariah Python Radio, E.B. Moralia, and Rogue Reptiles. They're all going to be sponsoring that event. Hopefully this year we're going to have a lot more type of swag stuff, you know, shirts. And I think the shirts this year, though, we won't put a date on. We'll only put carpet back on.
They can be used for multiple years.
Yes.
Yeah. That's the point. So.
Owen didn't tell me that when I put the initial.
I was not part of the committee that designed the logo. So
the shirt committee. So. Very good.
We have
the only
a
other thing that,
committee here.
Yeah. The only other thing that I have is check out ebmoralia.com. That's my own little venture into the snake breeding biz. Go over there and check that out. And that's pretty much all I got. What do you got, Owen?
I got that if you're in Pennsylvania, we will be up at the Pocono Reptile Show on Saturday. And I'm actually going to be getting on stage and talking about carpet pythons and other Indonesian species.
Cool.
Yeah, I might be bringing some of our white lips with us, depending on the weather and what moods they're in. And we're going to be bringing a few of our others. I'm going to be bringing my big old 10-foot carpet python out to say hello to the people. And, we're going to be selling a few babies. We won't have our full stock, but we'll be selling a few things. And then... Rogue is actually probably going to be shut down a little bit. I mean, we're going to be going to the Hamburg show in October, but the end of September, I'm going to be away, and the snake room is being redone, and we would normally go to the Oaks show, but we're going to have to skip it. So we probably won't be at the next Oaks show. I know some people were expecting us at that, and I usually always say, you know, at the show, yeah, we'll be at the next one, so this time we're probably not going to be there. And, of course, you can go to rogue-reptiles. We just had the website redone. It's still got some kinks on it. We are still working on it. We're waiting for some pictures of various animals, but we'll be getting things up and running very soon.
You got a full list of all the babies that we have for sale, and that will be expanding soon as the caramels are getting ready to be up for sale. And also keep your eyes out for that brand new tiger clutch that just hatched. Pictures and everything on Rogue Reptiles on Facebook too.
Yeah, I know those parents are they're awesome. They're really cool.
I can't wait. You see, you know, all those little baby tigers came out gray and black and ugly, and I'm like, color, damn you, color now. I want to see it now. So I have to wait. So we will see what comes up out of that. But
cool,
exciting. So
yes, yes. I guess that's. I feel like I'm forgetting something, but
we are sponsored by Morelia Pythons. .com, the best place for Morelia Python forums ever. I don't know. I was throwing that up. I was thinking that was what you were forgetting. Who's on?
No,
the
I said that, but we can't ever say enough of that. So
no, we can't. We should say it all the time. Yeah. We should have a pause, like a commercial, and break, and just talk about it. Anyway.
Yeah, yeah, I was thinking about that. I was thinking about
sorry,
that.
I'm sorry, Sean. So, what about the who's on next week?
Next week is kind of going to be a hold on, let me get his name.
Oh no.
Well, actually, what it is it's a gentleman that contacted me a few times, and he does this really cool. I'll have to put it up on the Facebook page.
Yeah, I have to.
But he does this. Cool custom habit design for arboreal snakes. His name is Ron Rundu. And
okay.
Oh man, sorry, my phone is buzzing like crazy. Should I put
what
it on
mute? What
the
hell are you doing?
Yeah, I know. Sorry.
I swear, I
was trying to get his name for that, but anyway. Yeah, he does this. It's really wild. He takes, like, I don't know exactly what material he's working with, but he makes it look like a real, you know, like a branch that's in the wild. So, you know, he as far as carpets and chondros and stuff like that, I mean, you know, most of Morelia is arboreal. You know, if you're doing a natural habitat setup, for your carpet python or chondro or scrub or whatever. This guy does.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, if you're doing like a display cage, which, again, I say all the time, you know, I don't think that we've even tapped into that type of audience.
Hell no.
Yet, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, but really, carpets and chondros and, you know, what they make awesome display animals, you
yeah,
know, really, really cool, really cool stuff. So anyway, he's going to come on, he's going to talk about that. He's not really going to take up the whole show. And then the rest of the show will, you know, hopefully by then I'll have my, the contest that we're going to do and the, award show thing for the, year anniversary show. And, we'll hit on that and tell you all the details on that. And then after that, we have, I always say his name wrong, Hesham? Hesham, right?
Okay.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Carpet python. He's going to come on and talk to us some more carpet pythons. I definitely want to, I'm working on a Liasa show, and I'm still trying to reach out for some Woma breeders to talk to them. And, you know, so, like I said, the future is good for carpet python. Right? By that point, we will probably be on the year anniversary show. So.
Sweet. We can waste some time there.
Yeah, so cool, cool. But that's kind of the future. So stay tuned. Check out the page. It's blogtalkradio.com/MoreliaPythonRadio. And that will have our upcoming guest as we as I post them up. But I think in the last couple minutes, the only thing that I would hit on is I'm going to throw out. I don't know about you, Owen, but I listen to the other Blog Talk reptile related shows. There's definitely some cool ones. Of course, there's Reptile Radio. I think CK is he's been hosting it for the past maybe couple months, and they usually focus on ball pythons, but actually they've really had a pretty diverse collection of guests the past couple months. So, so that's always good to listen to. There's also Urban Jungles Radio. They focus more on the conservation and such, and they focus on a wide variety of topics as far as reptiles go. I know they've had everybody from Bob Irwin to you know, little local breeders, but definitely a cool show to check out. There is Herpentine, and the those guys talk about the one guy's from Pennsylvania, and as they go around on the show, he's actually herping as he goes. So I mean, he ain't messing around when it comes to Herpentine. Yeah, that's a pretty cool show. They have some cool guests on there. Again, it's just kind of a general reptile related show. They talk punch on a bunch of different type of species. Definitely go check out, I know it's not a radio podcast, but Snake Bites TV,
yep.
Brian Check, that's cool. That comes out every Wednesday, always a cool thing to watch. And then, which one am I forgetting? I know I'm forgetting one. Now I can't remember, so I guess I'll leave it at that. So check out those shows. Definitely some cool stuff going on there. So that's pretty much all I got.
Awesome.
So you're going to go take care of some babies, right?
Oh, dear God. I got to go downstairs and clean everybody and separate out all the babies. And, you know, you people with your tiny carpet clutches of like 10 or 12. So simple.
What did you have again?
16,
okay.
16, but then the other two clutches were like in the 30s this year, so it's like, all right,
yeah.
It sucks. So.
You want me to take some carpets with me to Tinley and paddle them?
I will send you with some, and they will be fantastic.
Yeah.
So, I'm going to send you, you can be bringing them right back.
Very cool.
So, I can't do much selling if I'm a cardboard cutout, so...
Wouldn't it be funny if you sold more as the cardboard cutout than you did?
I would bring it everywhere. Are you kidding me? I would just buy a table and set myself up and walk away.
Just pull those strings.
How that would go.
Yeah. Hello, my name is Owen.
Exactly.
So.
Please deposit money in the drawer. Here's your change. Thank you much.
Yeah, very good. So, yeah, that's all I got. Just make sure you check out Paul Harris at UK Pythons if you're interested in getting some cool carpet pythons.
Mm-hmm.
Get him or get in touch with Nick Mutton at Inland Reptiles. I think it's inlandreptiles.com. And you can get in on that shipment that's coming in, what do you say, 6 weeks?
So something like that. You should know. You don't have it marked on your calendar.
Yeah. Well, I don't get it. Like I said, I don't get everything in 6 weeks. I'm just finishing
right.
up last year's shipment. So.
Jesus.
So, okay.
All right.
We did it.
Sweet. All right, everybody. Have a good night, and we'll see you all next week.